Pensaban, ya no me acuerdo.
Good evening. Sorry. Good afternoon. Today we are going to recite the Heart Sutra, and I'm sorry to say that we are not able to provide the Heart Sutra in English. Hope to provide in future. Okay. So we are going to recite the Heart Sutra in Tibetan. So while we recite the Heart Sutra, I think you have a short passage down there. The brief form of Heart Sutra. So you can keep on reciting that in English while we recite in Tibetan. Okay?
So on page 3, just the Seed of Wisdom Sutra, page 3.
And recitation of the Heart Sutra will be followed up by the recitation of the mantra of Loin-Faced Dakini. Probably it may not be there in this English, but it doesn't matter. And after that we do the mandala offering, and that's the kind of the common chant that we are going to do together. Okay?
Papa, kunjo kumla cha selo, dige da gete batu jina chunde ne gebe kabcha ko kumbore la gelong ge gendu chimbo jini se me gendu chim ta ju du ju du de ise chunde ne samon na shi jebe chu gnam dang tinge dena ni bo yang de ise chunjo sim bas ma chimo phawa jene se wan ju jero ge haru de chim bas ma chu banya na bar da ji phu mong ma bo te da la ya ran shi ge tong ban sang ge ge de se na de ma shari de chunjo sim bas ma phawa jene se wan ju la tinge jeme kan la na ngar jero ge haru de chim bas ma chu ba chu bar de ba de chidar la bar cha dige je me ba da chunjo
Yanda Bado Chanju, Gumba Doba, Sang, Yes, Tedawa, and Sheriff Giparu, Chimbe, Ribachimbe, Lana, Maybe, Yamba, Yambe, Dunga, Jerobu, Shiver, Chibbe, Timber Shiver Chadi, Sheriff Giparu, Chimbe, Ma, Meba, Tea, Gade, Gade, Paragade, Parasanga, De Bodi, so, Jusimba, Simba, Chimbo, Tedra, Sheriff Giparu, Chimbala, Chimbo, Tene, Tingi, the Tele, Shing, the Chanju Simba, Simba, Chimbo, Papa, Jerry, Wanju.
la leso shin chawa leso leso rigi pute de shin rigi pute de shin de chidra kyu ge temba shin do shero ge paro do chimba samon la jeba tin sheba nam gyan jesu yinang ma chunde de ge de ge je ka de ne se dan temba shero de de bu dan chin ju sen ba sen ka ba jin re si on chu dan tham je da den be khor te da dan pa dan mi dan hama yin dan chidra je be ji de yin chunde de ge sung ba la ngom bar tu kala jebe ne cho thamba ne ngi shi du chung ma be tu du jin du ba po la ma ye pu shi ne sum khan du tho la cha se lo a ka samara da sha da ra samara ye aga samara da sha da ra samara ya phe pa ba kun jo sum ge kai den be to ge che do ba ju ji me ba ju ji ge da ge ba ji mi den be chori ngi ba dum ji shin de gu ru ye so ha ge re ton tha ge chu shi mi de ne be ken dan te wa dan thum ba ru ju ji phu dum so ta ji te jang thing de re de le sho me do dam re re ba li ji ni de ge ma sang ge xing du mi de ro gu nam da xing la ju ba yi dam gu ru ra na me de la ga ne ya da ya sang ge che dan tho ge cho nam la chan ju par du da ni kya da ge che she gi be cho nam do la phen ji re sang ge du ba ra sho ye che dan tho ge chong nam chang ju par do da ni kya su chi da ge che she gi be thon do la pen jre sang ge du par sang ge che dan tho ge chong nam da chang ju par do da ni kya da ge che she gi be thon nam do la pen jre sang ge du par padan nam mi nam yam ji yong bo dan ge jin lo zo ju ge jo lo jawa ji ban nu sang ge sung ar du ji de ge de be ge ge de da she ge tam be chu ni chi ren ni de ri she ji de be ge jin yun de ren je zo be de ro ge ro ba de ji ban de lo zo du de ji gu bai de be la be ni ja yi shin da jung se yun min be ong bo dan ni le bo ro tu la tu be sung ni ta ye ge de lu dan lu jin ge zu bo dan nam mi ge nam dan ro wa gu ni dan na ji dum tam je ge du da ge che dun do okay, listen to the teachings with proper motivation. Cultivate it deeply in yourself, as I explained yesterday, and according to the instructions of the lineage gurus. Now, to get into the text, the foundation of all good qualities. This text was initially written by his holiness or the great master Tsongkhapa long time ago. And this text is written in a form of a supplication or maybe a request to the assembly of the enlightened beings. So while we recite it, we recite it in a form of prayer or a supplication. But then, besides being a prayer and supplication, this text also presents a very summarized form of the instructions of the Buddha or the teachings of the Buddha. So this is a very important text for that reason.
First of all, I appreciate the board of directors of Sutan Targa Ling to choose this text for my discourse. I feel fortunate to be able to teach this text today in Thupten Targa Ling. I received the oral transmission of this text from my masters and also received a commentary on the text from my masters in past. So the teachings that I'm doing here is not like a teaching done without any lineage blessings. It's fully blessed by the lineage masters. It's something that you should understand and you should know. In Tibetan tradition, if we do teach specific text without any lineage blessings and any transmission received from lineage masters, that is an improper way of doing the teachings and discourses. That kind of attitude is branded as dancing by reading the books, not getting any instructions from the alive teacher, which is improper thing, according to Tibetan tradition, according to Tibetan Buddhist tradition. So why it is like that? It's very important. First, I should explain a little bit about that. Of course, by reading the books, we may get some understanding of the contents. But when we receive the instructions and the commentaries and explanation on those books and text from a lineage holder, it will be very different. There are a lot of instructions, those are transmitted from one teacher to his disciple, and in this manner, which are not recorded in a written text. So those instructions cannot be received unless we listen to the teachings of a live human being. And beside that, when we read the text, we can just get the meanings and the understanding that is limited to the words. If you learn with a live master, the teachings are not just limited to the words of the master. The physical presence of the master and the values and the lifestyle of the master, what he leaves, will be also a part of the teaching, which makes a lot of difference in our life. For that reason, it's very important to have a live master in our life. Now, if we learn science or technology or something else, maybe it may not be that kind of important to have a live master. But if we learn the spirituality, of course it is very important. Because spirituality is meant for improvement and development of one's mind, one's attitudes. And for that, it is very important to have a live master who can be a live example. So for that reason, every time in Tibetan Buddhist tradition, we emphasize a lot on the spiritual guide. So this is very important to understand the emphasizing or the emphasis that put that is put on the relationship and sound and quality relationship between the spiritual guide and the disciple is very important because of these reasons. Many times in the Western society there are chances for misunderstanding. Personally, I would like to say as a teacher, if my students or my audience who listen to my teachings, if they treat me with respect or not, it doesn't make any difference to me. So it's like that. So to begin with the text, I would like to first put forward a brief outline. This text has 14 verses or 14 paragraphs. And the whole text can be, in terms of its meaning, can be divided into three portions. First portion is to pray and supplicate, to be able to carry on a proper practice of guru devotion, to maintain a proper relationship with one's own guru. And from the second verse up to the 12th verse or the paragraph, it deals with the supplication and prayer to train oneself into the path, various levels of path, the path common with the small scope and path common with the middle scope and the great scope path, and within the great scope there is the perfection of wisdom portion of the path and the tantra portion of the path. So all those things are dealt in between paragraph number 2 to paragraph number 12. And then paragraph number 13 and paragraph number 14 is special dedication to a certain extent. Paragraph number 13 is a dedication to dedicate all the merits, whatever is collected by doing the practices and by recitation of this prayer, for the clearance of the obstacles, whatever is lurking there. And the last paragraph is to dedicate those merits for remain in contact with the spiritual master and keep evolving and growing up in the spiritual practices, in the path, and achieve the Buddhahood. So, under these three sections, the whole text is completed. So it's very important to have this kind of understanding, how the whole text deal with the different purposes and paths and all those things. And the text is, there are different versions of translation of the text available in English. I always prefer to compare the versions of the translation, because I learned the text in Tibetan language, the original language in which it was composed. So when I read it in any other language than that, in many occasions, the usage of the words and the terms produce confusion and doubts. So it's always more preferable to do a comparable, a kind of comparing the different versions of the translation. So I do have two different versions. The version that is in this book, The Foundation of Good, All Good Qualities, by Geshe-la, is originally based on the oral translation of Lobsang Gyaltsen. And I do believe that he's a good translator and knowledgeable person. So believe that he may have rendered a very good translation of this text. And another one that I have here is translated by Alexander Berzin. He's also a Buddhist scholar. And the original translation he has done in the year 1982, and it was revised by him again in the year 2003. So these are two different versions of the translation that I'm reading, and I'm trying to compare. It is not very uncommon thing to do like this, even in Tibet, because most of the original Buddhist texts were translated into Tibetan from Sanskrit or any other Indian languages. And in certain occasions, the Tibetan translations were so rich and so variable that, for an example, in the case of the Yamataka Tantra, there were 16 different translations of the similar text. So it's that kind of availability of different versions of the translations provided a great advantage for the Tibetan Buddhist scholars to come down to a kind of a more accurate meaning of the original text. For that reason, I think the comparable and kind of comparing of different versions of the translation is important. So, coming to the first verse of this text, probably all of you may have the Geshe-la's book, so I'm going to read from the Geshe-la's book first. The foundation of all good qualities is the kind guru. Cultivating the guru properly is the root of the path. Realizing this clearly with great diligence, bless me to rely on the Guru with highest devotion. So this is the translation rendered by Mr. Galton. Now, to read from Mr. Alexander Berzin, healthy reliance on kind spiritual master, the foundation for all good qualities, is the root of the path. Seeing this well, I request inspiration to rely with great appreciation through many intervals. So you see the differences. The usage of the terms and usage of the words, there are huge differences. It appears like it's a completely two different passage, you know. So it's like that. Anyway, if we try to get to the meaning, the first passage, as I explained earlier, or first paragraph, in the first paragraph, the order try to order pray for be able to maintain a very good relationship with his spiritual master or the spiritual guide. Here it is very important to understand the word used, guru and the spiritual master, something like that, you know. In the original Sanskrit it is Kalyan Mitra, and Mitra is something for friend or something for like guide. Kalyan is something like virtuous. So virtuous guide or virtuous friend, something like that. But then guru has a very different, distinct meaning in Sanskrit and even in Tibetan. So, like, you know, these kinds of differences are there. Anyway, I don't like to get into such things in detail. So, going back to the meaning of this passage is... the spiritual guide or the kind of a virtuous friend, whatever it is explained in the first line as is the kind of foundation or maybe a source of all the good qualities. Because the word Tibetan she could be source, could be cause, could be base, could be foundation in English. So it has a variable meanings. So why do we say that? Here again, how could it be possible that the spiritual guide or the virtuous friend could be the root and source of all the good qualities, all the good things that exist in our life? Now, from the beginning of our life, if we don't come in contact with any good friend and any good person, of course, we will never have good things in our life. Just imagine, if we were a kid, we come into the contact of kind of a seasoned criminal, and what will they do? They will definitely teach us how to be a how to commit the crimes, how to do the bad things. If they teach us those things, probably we are going to learn those things and we live that kind of life. So it's very important to come into contact with the right person and virtuous persons and virtuous friends and guides. So this is one reason why I feel that, this is my personal feeling, the text doesn't say that, that parents are the first virtuous friends and the virtuous guides in our life. If someone's parent is a criminal and they teach the bad things to the kid, probably the kid will end up in doing those things in their life. So as a parent, most of the time, most of the parents, they try to give good values to their kids. So parenting is not an easy thing. It's a very challenging thing. For that reason, in the old civilization, most of the old civilization, they always teach that we should respect our parents. We should pay respect to our parents and take care of them and all those things. Those are not a part of religion. It is a part of human culture that exists in many parts of the world. But sometimes in a certain modern society, that kind of value appears like it's disappearing. It is a serious problem that we need to address in a modern society. So, from that point of view, it is quite kind of provable that whatever good deeds or whatever good things that exist in our life is dependent on others. Without coming into contact with any good person, there is no way that one can be good. We are always influenced by the environment and by the people that we live with. Of course, sometimes certain Western field of knowledge also claims that we are 70% the environment and the community surrounding us, and just 30% of us are ourselves. We are shaped, our personality is shaped based on the environment that we live around. So, if we look at the things from this angle, it makes a lot of sense to say that the spiritual guide and the virtuous friend are really important in our life. It is not just an invention of Tibetan lamas to get respect from their students. So it's very important in that way. And in the original Tibetan book, Tibetan version, we have a word kind. And in the both translation, they do have a word kind used here. Why do we say kind to this spiritual guide, or maybe the spiritual master, or maybe the virtuous friend? Someone care for us, then from that sense of caring comes out the good instructions. If someone really doesn't care for us, then it's very difficult that those persons will give good instructions, helpful instructions to us. That is the reason why we say kind. And once we get into that kind of person, into the contact of that kind of person who is kind and capable to guide us to all the good things in our life, then it is very important to maintain a very good and sound relationship with that kind of person. It's very important. In fact, if we explain it from the perspective or the context of Dharma practice, it is the root of all the spiritual improvement. And it is very important to realize that. Unless we realize that, unless we understand it is so important, we will never come to give that importance to it. So for that reason it says that by seeing, like here, realizing this clearly in one of the versions, and in the other version it says that seeing this well, yeah, meaning is almost same. Seeing what well? That maintaining a sound and good and quality relationship with one's own spiritual guide and spiritual master is the root of all the kind of achievements in one's spiritual practice. With seeing this well, with understanding this well, and what we need to do is, with great diligence, through my endeavors, different texts use different versions of the explanation. By working hard enough, with a deep sense of diligence, one should maintain that relationship well and rely upon that master for one's own improvement and development and growth. And finally, in both of the texts, there is a word in the first translation, it says, bless me. And in the second translation, it says, inspiration. I request inspiration too. Now, blessing and inspiring may be literally quite different, you know, but the translation uses this for the same Tibetan word. Tibetan word here is chinki lok. Bless me is also used in that context, and I request inspiration too is also used in that for that same meaning. So, what does chinki lok means? Chin is some kind of, you know, power and capability or strength or something like that. So, improve my strength or my capability or my kind of power, that kind of thing. So what does it mean? Please bless me to have that kind of attitude towards the great spiritual master or the richest friends. So, as I told you earlier, this verse is a supplication in one way. But in the Tibetan word, normally most of the supplication, it comes with a certain specific words in it. So what that? But here in this sense, this case, this, that word is missing, but then there is this word, lop, is a request. Is a request to one's own guru and the assembly of enlightened beings to do something. To do what? To bless me. To improve the, to give me inspiration. To improve that kind of sense of feeling to do something good. In this case, to maintain a good relationship with one's own spiritual master, which is very important. So this is first passage in which the whole passage focuses on the practice of guru devotion or the practice of maintaining a sound and good relationship with one's spiritual master, which is inevitable and which is indispensable in order to improve, in order to grow in the spiritual practice. So this is a kind of, how to say, a summarized meaning of this passage. Since we have shortage of time, I don't like to go into the details of the explanation. So, and then the next passage in the paragraph here is, only once won this glorious birth of freedom. By appreciating its rarity and meaningfulness, with a mind that seizes its essence day and night, bless me to generate this thought continuously without cease. Now in the second version of translation, this excellent working basis with its respites found but once is difficult to obtain. Having realized this great importance, I request inspiration to develop without disruption an attitude to take its essence in all ways, day and night. Once again, literally, there is a huge difference, you know? But is it translation of same passage in Tibetan? See, now this paragraph onward, though it's a, once again, in the form of supplication, but then we deal with the whole path. In the first paragraph, normally in Lamrim text, we say, root of all the path and root of all the achievements in the path is the proper practice of maintaining a good relationship and sound relationship with one's master. That is explained in the first passage. And that is a very important part of the Lamrim teachings. And most of the experienced teachers always say that. That is the most difficult part. It is the biggest hurdle that everyone needs to jump through. Once a practitioner has jumped through that hurdle, the second and third hurdles are much less difficult compared to that first hurdle. Because it is very difficult because most of the time in a common world from whom we receive our teachings appears like a common human being. So it appears like this person has a lot of shortages and a lot of faults. So how could pay respect? It may appear like this person is doing a lot of mistakes. How can you respect that? It is imperfect. But to overcome those things, there are a lot of helpful instructions given in Lamrim. There are a lot of helpful instructions. Unfortunately, I cannot go through all those instructions because of the instructions being very elaborate and detailed. But I think you will probably get time, whenever you get time, you can go through this portion of the Lamrim, the initial first portion of the Lamrim. You will get a lot of helpful instruction there. Now then onward, the actual practice of the path begins from the practice of the common path with the small scope, or of the small scope. Now here, common practices of the small scope practitioner. Is explained in the second paragraph, which I read. And within the instructions related to the small scope practices, there are three different, the three main instructions. Those are, first, to establish the greatness and the preciousness of the human birth that we are enjoying. And the second is, after that, to establish the impermanence nature of that very existence, the precious human birth. Then, third is, to establish the existence of and the functioning of cause and effect, especially in terms of the karma and its result. And thirdly, driven by that understanding of the cause and effect and the karma and its result, inspire oneself or to push oneself forward to avoid getting engaged in any kind of misdeeds and bad karmas, and work as hard as possible to do good deeds throughout one's life. So these are the main issues that is dealt in this text, because of it, this text is very brief and compact. We can only deal with these important issues here in the first portion. So in the first paragraph, which I just read to you, it deals with the importance of the human birth, especially the precious human birth, or sometimes we also use the word magnificent human birth. I explained yesterday, why it is precious. This birth that we have achieved in this life, with all its leisure or the freedom, whatever we use, and with all its endowed qualities or the facilities that we have achieved, is extremely rare, first thing. It is rare because it cannot be achieved in this way again and again very easily. That is one condition. And it is very difficult to achieve this. That is another condition. And upon that, an important condition, further important condition is, it's it's extremely meaningful and extremely kind of capable to do a lot of things as long as we have it. So that is the biggest and important part of it. So we need to realize these things. Unless we understand these things, we will never come to generate a willingness to not to waste it. Let's just take some live example. If someone don't know how valuable $1 million is, then it is very possible that that person will keep wasting that $1 million. Now I'm talking in a commercial sense, you know, not in a spiritual sense. So, if a person knows that, how difficult it is to earn $1 million, and how kind of helpful it is to have this $1 million, and how rare it is an occasion of owning $1 million, then that person, whenever that person owns that $1 million, of course, that person will definitely work hard to not to waste it and make a right use of it, a maximum use of it, to get a maximum benefit from it. In the same way, we also need to think about that, the precious human birth. But unfortunately, it doesn't happen in that way, because we take it as a granted. Something very, very well, kind of, how to say, basic, that everyone enjoys. But it is not like that. As I told you yesterday, of course there are a lot of human beings on the planet Earth. Of course there are a lot of human beings in this city. But how much of those human beings really enjoy the precious human birth? This is a very kind of important point that we need to ponder on. Unless it is always possible that we keep on thinking as the things, these are granted. Like in USA, most of your kids, they probably feel that whatever facilities you use in USA, like very common to have these things. Everyone can have these things. But when you bring those kids to Africa or India, then they will realize, no, it's not like that. Well-paved road is not something that exists everywhere, you know. Beautiful gardens and clean streets. A lot of things. So in the same way, we also need to think about the precious human birth, you know. So, with realizing these things, how rare it is, how precious it is, how difficult it is to have it and acquire it, and how important and meaningful and helpful this precious human birth is. With realizing that, with understanding that, and what we need to do is, we need to cultivate a deep sense of willingness to not to waste it and try to achieve highest possible goal with using this opportunity, whatever we have in our hand. So, then the final line of this passage says, to generate this thought continuously without cease. And in this one it says, I request inspiration to develop without disruption. So, the meanings appears quite similar, you know. So, the thing is, to have this kind of feeling of preciousness of this birth and a deep sense of willingness to not to waste it and to use it for a proper practice and achievement and self-improvement and growth must be arising there continuously, not just one time, at one moment. If you have just it for one time and one moment, it doesn't help that much. So it is important to have it for a continuity, in a continued manner, in an everyday manner. And once again, at the end, the Master and the assembly of the enlightened beings are requested to give me that kind of strength and power to have it. Then, so that's the second paragraph in which the main essence that dealt is the preciousness and the graceness of the this precious human birth and to cultivate the deep sense of willingness to not to waste it. Then the third paragraph reads, the motion of body and life force is like a bubble, swiftly perishing. Therefore, contemplate impermanence, for after this life, just as shadow follows form, good and bad karmic fruits pursue us. And this version says, at death, my body and life force will perish quickly, like bubbles on a moving stream. Remembering this and having found stable certainty that after death the fruits of my noble and dark actions will follow behind. Once again, there is a huge difference between the wordings, you know. So, in this paragraph, it's prayed for to have a kind of to have a realization of the death and the impermanence. Here it says that motion of body and life force is like a bubble, swiftly perishing. Our body, it may appear like, can remain there for long period, long time, but in reality, if we contemplate and if we analyze our body, it's constantly changing. The cells inside our body is constantly changing. We are losing probably millions of cells every moment, and millions of new cells are produced. So it's a constant change that is happening within our body. So the body, which appears like it is quite strong, maybe it can sustain for next 40 to 50 years, but it is highly possible that the same body may perish in next few days. Who knows? So here, the analogy used is the bubble, the water bubbles. The water bubbles, they just exist for a very short period. In the similar way, our life and our body itself also exist for a very short period if it is compared to any other things that exist around. So this is one thing. For that reason, the body will perish very swiftly, because it's like a bubble. So with that kind of contemplation, it is very important to remember, recall the death. Now, remembering of death is very important here. And many times it's very important to explain this. Many times in the certain society, people don't like to discuss death. They say they get fearful, or they fear about discussing the death. So they try to avoid discussing the death. But in Buddhist teachings, it is very important to discuss the death and contemplate on it, and remember it, and constantly be aware of it. It's very important. The life of human being is a period between birth and death. When the death comes, the life ceases. When the birth happens, the life starts. So, we don't have any control over our birth. It's already started. It's already gone, happened. And it's very sure that death is going to come. So, if it is like that, then it is good to prepare for the death. That can be done. Something that can be done in our life. So how to prepare for the death? If we don't understand what is death, how it happens, what are its characteristics, there is no way that we can prepare for the death. So for that reason, according to Buddhism and Buddha's teachings, it is very important to contemplate on the death and remember the death and prepare for the death. So, for that reason, remembering the death and contemplating on the death is very important. Here, this instruction, how to contemplate on the death, is explained in these portions. We can use here three foundations or three bases. Maybe we can also say three roots. Those three roots are, or three bases and three foundations, are death is definite. It is going to come. It is just a matter of time. Death is definite. And the time of death is indefinite. It is not fixed. We don't know when it is going to happen. And once the death happens, it is very clear that only our spiritual practices will help us. None of other things will help us. So these are the three bases, or three foundations, or three roots, whatever we say, or three main things that is involved in the contemplation of the death. Then these three main things are established through nine reasoning for each main thing. There is one, three reasons. For the first one, death is definite. Surely each and every individual will die. That is established through three reasonings, and those are: the Lord of Death will definitely come and cannot be diverted or cannot be driven away by any kind of conditions and causes or any kind of forces. That is first reason. And second reason is the lifespan. The lifespan, you cannot add up anything on that. But the lifespan that is allocated is constantly kind of decreasing, because every moment we live, from that allocated lifespan, we are eating certain parts. So it's constantly kind of decreasing in its quantity or in its length. And third thing is, while we are alive, most of us, we end up in beings engaged, very deeply engaged in various mundane activities. We seldom get enough time and opportunity to do the practice of Dharma. So these are the three reasons through that we try to establish the first main thing, or the root thing, that life is kind of, death is indefinite, and death is definite and surely come. And then the second thing, the time of death is unpredictable or indefinite. It's also established through three reasoning. Those are, first is the beings that live in this world. In Sanskrit we say Jambudvipa, or the, in English we can also say Earth, planet Earth. So the dwellers of the planet Earth, those lifespan of the dwellers of the planet Earth is not fixed. It is indefinite, or it is a kind of, there is no fixed time. Like, someone can die very young, someone can die very old, someone can die in middle age. So life, the length of life is not fixed. second reason is there are more conditions which may cause death than those conditions which may help us to live. That is the second condition. It may appear like a little bit obsolete if I don't explain. People may feel like, oh, there are more conditions that may help us to, that may support us to live, than that will lead us to death. But in reality, most of those conditions that appears to support, that appears like is, will support us to live, definitely have this capacity to cause death. Of course, to live, we need food, we need housing, we need clothing, and all these things. But food can be a cause of death, house can be a cause of death, clothing could be a cause of death. So anything that we need to survive, that we need to live for, could be a cause of death. And in the other hand, there are many things which may cause us death, but that may not support us to live. So there are more causes and conditions, there are more things that can cause death than that may help us to live. That is the reason why it is put in that way. And then the third condition, reason here is our body is so delicate that because of its being so delicate itself is one reason that death can happen anytime. Of course, body is so delicate because body requires a lot of external things for its kind of sustenance, for its continuity, like breathe. To live, we need to breathe in and out. If our body is deprived of the oxygen for a certain period of time, it cannot sustain anymore. It cannot live anymore. So it's a very delicate thing. And then there are three more reasons to establish. When we die, only the practices, only the Dharma practices and the spiritual practices will allow. The first is our body itself. When the death comes, body is not capable to help anymore. Even if someone is extremely strong, death can happen to them. Even if someone is extremely big, death can happen to them. If someone is extremely kind of athletic, it doesn't matter, death can happen to them. So, when the death comes and death happens, after the death, even after the death, body cannot do anything to help us. The functioning of the body is just up to that point, until the death. Once the death is happened, body have no role to play after that. And then the second thing is the wealth and the belongings. When the death already has happened, wealth can't do anything for us. There is no way that we can buy the life back by paying a huge check. if it is possible, maybe probably there will be a lot of billionaires willing to do that. So, since it is not possible, billionaires also have to die. You know? So, it's like that. Power, strength, position, nothing can help after the death. Even at the point of the death, most powerful person on the earth have to die. Most achieved person on the earth have to die. So it's like that. So there is nothing these can do. After the death, it's unimaginable to have these things helping us. Then the relatives or the friends or the armies or the society can't do anything after the death. Once the death happens, we are broken away from the society. We are broken away from the relatives. We have to carry on the journey alone. No one can accompany us after the death. So, it's like that. So only the thing that can help us after the death is our own spiritual practice. Whatever we have done, whatever good deeds that we have done in our life. That will help us. That will benefit us. If we have done enough good deeds, we can definitely enjoy, have a better future after the death. If we have done more negative and harmful deeds that may follow us to give more trouble and problem. So, through these three, nine different reasons, we try to establish and we need to come to a conclusion that death is definitely going to happen and it is it's a indefinite or I keep on forgetting the words. Unpredictable. It is unpredictable. Yeah. And then, finally, only after the death, only our spiritual practices, whatever we have done throughout the life, in our life, will help. Nothing more and nothing less. So, it is important to understand these things and kind of contemplate on these things and try to establish. And with that remembering and recalling of the death, try to change one's lifestyle, try to live a better life, with more involved in doing the Dharma practices and the good deeds and distancing away oneself from getting engaged in any kind of bad and harmful deeds. And then, so this is one thing. And after that, the next point is to recall the the karma and its result. The functioning of the cause and effect. So, to recall that, we already have established that death is kind of definite and surely going to happen. So what is going to happen after the death? We need to contemplate here. After the death, the movement and the development, whatever we go through, is completely dependent on our good and bad deeds that we earn or that we commit in this life. Now, these good and bad deeds are referred as dark and bright deeds in the text. Now, initially, first thing that we need to do is we need to establish the functioning of cause and effect. Whatever exists in the universe exists through its causes, except certain kind of imaginative things. Those, if there are certain imaginative things, like projection of certain things, those projections are just kind of a projection of mind. Of course, those are dependent on the mind itself, but according to the Buddhist logic, those are not a product. Those are imaginations, so those are not something functional. So those are not produced by any causes and conditions. But beside that, anything that exists have to be produced by anything else or something else. Some kind of causes and conditions. Like in our life, whatever we use, foods, clothing, housing, and everything, must have to come from any kind of causes and conditions. Without any causes and conditions, there is no way that these can exist. So this is very clear in external world that we can see very clearly. Now then, the internal feeling, the good feeling, the bad feeling, the high times of our inner feeling and the low tides of our inner feeling that we go through definitely have to come through any kind of causes and conditions. Without causes and conditions, there is no possible. It is not possible that any of these things can happen. So, from where does it come from? What are those causes? What are those conditions? It is very important to contemplate here. If we don't contemplate here, if we don't try to understand here, then it is very difficult to establish the functioning of karma and its result, or law of karma and its result. So, first thing is like this. If the visible world, in the visible world, if these causes and results are so kind of accurately related to each other, Why not in the invisible world? Invisible world of feelings and high and low frequency and low tides of the mind. Why not? It can be connected in that way. Now then, another way of looking at it is, if someone can be happy by, as a result of, as a product of doing something bad, then how to explain whole situation? If it is going to be, is it random? Or there is a pattern? Or how does it work? We need to think very carefully here. Of course, it's very difficult to say that it is random. If it is not random, then there should be a pattern. There should be a kind of step-by-step following. Now, if there is a pattern, if there is a kind of step-by-step movement from one state to another, how could it be? In the other hand, in the external world, the causes and conditions are very accurately related to each other. Like, you know, if we cultivate any kind of specific seeds, that will definitely produce specific type of tree or specific type of plant. By putting down a specific kind of seed, you cannot expect any kind of plant. That is kind of illogical. It doesn't work in that way. So, similarly, in that way, the inner cause and kind of results also function in the same way. The causes are accurately connected to their results or their fruits. And certain fruits and the results are accurately connected to their causes. If it is like that, if there is a very clear pattern that is followed, then how could it be? Now then it becomes very clear. Then there is only one way. If some kind of good inner deeds and wealth is earned, that will definitely produce a good inner result. If some kind of bad and negative inner deed is committed, that will definitely produce a bad and negative inner result. So if it is like that, then how to differentiate what is good and what is bad? Now basically, as long as we are human beings, we have to use the human values here. We cannot use any other values from the perspective of other living beings. So, if we use the human values, then how it happens? If we do something by being motivated by sense of caring to other, compassion to other, love to other, and aims to benefit other, help other, then those are the things, those are the good things, positive things. Those are appreciated by everyone. And that will definitely bring a similar result, a good feeling, a good inner achievement, positive inner achievement. Now, in the other hand, if we do something motivated by selfishness, sense of hatred, anger, willingness to harm other, not considering others' benefit, kind of those kind of attitudes, then of course those are negative. And that kind of thing will definitely bring a negative inner result. Now when we are explaining these things, when we are discussing this matter, it may appear to like people may people may question or people may argue from time to time. I've seen such a such bad guy, he's living a very good life, living a very happy life. I've seen such a such bad guy and he's living a very, very happy life. But now here, if someone is a bad guy, they are living a happy life, it may not necessary that whatever happy life, happiness he is living, have to be a result of that bad deed that he is doing at present. According to Buddhism, as I explained yesterday, the present mind that is existing in every one of us is a result of continuity of eons or billions of years. So, in the repository mind, there could be billions of seeds of negative deeds already existing. So, if someone is doing a bad deed now, if they are enjoying the good life, it could be possible that they are enjoying the good result of previous good deeds. The present bad deed is yet to ripen. Maybe it may take some time for them to get that bad result. If we try to apply it in our life, it's very simple. Whatever we eat today, it's not necessary that we are paying for that from today's earning. It is not necessary. Definitely we pay for that from yesterday's earning or maybe previous month's earning. It's very simple. So what we earn today, probably we are going to pay it for tomorrow's food or maybe the next month's food, you know. So whatever deed that we do at present, not necessary that we get the result of that deed at that moment. But if we do good deeds, there are big advantages. If we do a good deed driven by a deep and pure sense of love and kindness, even that kind of accomplishing or finishing that deed is very hard physically, but mentally, while we accomplish that, we feel satisfaction. We don't feel dissatisfaction and we don't feel unhappiness. That is a big advantage of the good deeds. Of course, in the other hand, there are certain such things also with the bad deeds involved, you know. Like according to the text, if it is an acute sense of desire to acquire the wealth, of course people, that person feels good while they earn the wealth. The attachment normally arises with the good feeling. It is very clear with that. But the outcoming result of that attachment is not going to be the good feeling. But while the attachment arises, it is quite attractive. Like, you know, you go down to the supermarket. You like to buy that, you like to buy that, you like to buy that. While you like to buy that, you feel good, you know. So that is the reason why when people go out to the supermarket, they end up in wasting a lot of money. Because they feel good. So desire naturally arises with this feeling of happiness. Now, at the other end, the hatred, if the hatred arises, it doesn't arise with happiness. If you hate someone, you cannot be happy at that moment. You will be unhappy. If you are angry with someone, you cannot be happy. You will definitely be unhappy at that moment when the anger is actively functioning. So these are the certain characteristics of the mental attitudes or the different emotions that we go through in life. So the essence is, good deeds will definitely result into good fruit or good achievement or good feeling, and bad deeds will definitely result into bad feelings and unhappiness, such things. There is no way that the results and the causes will crisscross. There is no way. It's quite accurate as it is, the external causes and conditions and its results. So if it is like that, then what happens? After the death, what remains of us? After the death, the remaining portion is the mind, the spirit. And if the spirit's journey have to go through the ups and downs, so what will determine where it is going to do, where it is going to be? Only the good deeds can assure us that the mind will go through a peaceful and happy journey after the death. The bad deeds will surely drive the mind through unhappy and disturbed journey. So, with understanding that, with having acquired a decisive and conclusive understanding of that, what we need to do is we need to train ourselves properly into the good and bad deeds. Train us properly into the good and bad deeds. That means to avoid getting involved into or getting engaged into any of bad deeds. The There are 10 major non-virtuous deeds. Basically, we need to avoid these things. I believe most of you have already heard this part of teaching many times. As most of you are old students, three non-virtuous deeds that is committed through, that can be committed through the usage of one's body, and four non-virtuous deeds that can be committed and completed through usage of one's voice, speech, and three non-virtuous deeds that can be completed and committed through usage of one's mind. These are the 10 major bad deeds. Basically, at least, we need to avoid that in order to secure our mind go through a peaceful and happy journey in future after the death. So, then, if it is possible, we need to learn in detail what are the bad deeds and what are the good deeds. Whatever 10 bad deeds that I told is just a gross calculation. It's a brief summary of all the bad deeds. But to understand bad deeds in detail, there are a lot of texts that deals with various types of bad deeds. Like certain chapter of Abhidharma Kosha explains 24 different types of, or 24 different categories of bad deeds. And there are classification of 15 different types of bad deeds. And there are explanations of various types of kind of minute conditions, how they kind of change the deeds from one state to another state. So these are details of the things that if someone is willing to understand and know, they should try to pursue and learn through reading those texts. By avoiding bad deeds, what we need to do is accumulate as much as possible the virtuous deeds or merit. And to avoid bad deeds and misconducts, one should always be vigilant about them. If such thing is going to happen, if what I'm doing, mindful and vigilant, this is very important. Unless we become mindful and vigilant, we definitely end up in committing a lot of non-virtuous deeds without knowing that we are doing those things. So in this paragraph, we supplicated in front of the assembly of the enlightened beings to bless us, or to bless our mind, to be able to remember the death impermanence and understand the functioning of cause and effect, law of cause and effect, and to generate a deep sense of willingness to avoid non-virtuous deeds, negative deeds, and then do as much as possible, or accumulate as much as possible the good deeds and the merits. Like that, then the next paragraph is with this firm conviction, abandoning even the smallest non-virtue and engaging in every virtuous deeds, bless me to always live conscientiously. Okay, this I already have explained, and here in this version it says, like a shadow to a body, I request inspiration always to take care to rid myself of even the slightest, most minor action that would build up a network of faults, and to accomplish every possible deed that will build up a network of constructive force. So, very different. So it's like that. And then we are going to stop here, because I completed this portion about the common practices with the small scope practitioner. This portion is completed. So tomorrow we are going to start from the common practices with the middle scope practitioners. And at this point I would like to welcome you to come up with your questions, if you have any questions. If there is no question, we are going to continue with the chantings. Yes, please.
Wait a second.
Please, Hartso.
Ken Rinpoche, in some of the studies that in Lamrim that some of the students are doing on Friday nights, we have come to a passage in the text where it Lama Tsongkhapa talks about during guru devotion, he does not say that the guru is the Buddha. But in the commentary from Pabongka Rinpoche and other commentaries, there is this line that says the guru is the Buddha, not like the Buddha, but the Buddha. And this confused us. It's very early on in the Lamrim Chenmo. Could you give us a little bit of clarification of that, please?
Okay. In the Lamrim, the kind of explanation that is given is more scholarly explanation, provable through the quoting of the previous scholars' texts and Buddha's teachings, those sutras and such. In Lamrim, it is done in that way, especially in the beginning portion of the Lamrim. it focuses more on the practices of the sutra. So I believe that Lama Tsongkhapa didn't say directly that the master guru is Buddha. But then in the commentaries, Phabunga Rinpoche of course understands that, but then Phabunga Rinpoche, I believe, has a mission. The mission is to find out a way how to help the disciples to cultivate the practice of guru devotion or the proper relationship with the master within the structure of, like, they are already a tantric practitioner. So if someone is already a tantric practitioner, of course, they have to accept the Buddha, guru as a Buddha. There is a deep logic behind that. But if you are just focused on sutra practice, that is not important. Now, let me go into the detail about why someone has to accept guru as a Buddha. In the tantric practices, whenever guru gives you an initiation, guru himself need to transform into a deity. So, unless the guru himself transform into a deity, guru cannot kind of initiate you into the mandala. Guru, being a common person, a common ordinary person, bring you and let you enter into the mandala and initiate you, that is simply impossible. So guru have to transform himself into the Buddha first. Deity. Deity always is a Buddha. A perfect being. Then only he have this capacity and power to accept a disciple and initiate it into the mandala. And for that reason, in Tantra, guru is none other than the Buddha. So here, it's important to understand that if you have received initiations from any master, according to tantric teachings, you have to accept that master similar to that deity, whatever you kind of prostrate, or whatever you have devotion, whatever you trust. Just imagine, there is no way that you can get the best statue, most kind of pricey statue, made of diamond, solid diamond, and someone put it on your head and say, oh, now you are initiated in certain mandala, and you can, today onward, you can do the practice of that deity. That is not simply possible. Instead, you need a live human being who received the similar instructions and teachings and initiation from a lineage master, and who is kind of well trained to do that, and who's qualified to do that, and he initiates you, and then you are permitted to do the practice of that tantra. So I think Phabunga Rinpoche's approach was, like, tantra was very prevalent in Tibetan society. I think during the lifetime of Tsongkhapa, it could be a little bit different. But tantra was quite prevalent at those times, even those times, but it could be a little different still. But during the Phabunga Rinpoche's time, you know, nowadays, tantra is a common topic all over the world. So in such a circumstances, from the beginning, it is good to guide them into that direction. So I think that is the different circumstances. Based on the different circumstances, they have different style of explanation. Please, carry on.
even in the Sutra Jhana itself, I heard that our teacher one time teaching us that our achievement depends on ability, our own ability to view the Guru as a Buddha or not. And therefore, this depends on us to view our Guru as a Buddha, if we want to, even if we want to practice Bodhisattva way. That I heard from our Guru also. My question is, my concern is, unless we are able to subdue the feeling of the self, ourselves first, before we can develop the willing to achieve enlightenment for other sentient being. If we cannot do that, I worry that that kind of willing is itself become a form of attachment. So, what is your Rinpoche advice for us in that aspect?
It means you need to control yourself.
Yes.
Of course, self-controlling is very important part of the Dharma practice. It's very important part of the Dharma practice, and if you don't have a control on yourself and your mind, there's no way that you can achieve anything. So the whole process is to control your mind and give it a kind of direction according to the Dharma instructions. So it's very important part of the Dharma practice. But then it cannot be done kind of spontaneously. To do that, you need to train. You need to learn. Without learning and without training, you can't do that. So for that reason, it's very important that from the beginning you learn. I will just put some example. Like, to be a good doctor, you need to train the kid from first level, from the ABCD. You cannot produce a doctor spontaneously from someone else. So, to produce a good scientist, you also need to train the kid from the first level, first standard. In the same way, to control the self-cherishing thought, or to contain the self-cherishing thought, or control the mind and give it a good direction according to the Dharma instructions, you need to learn step-by-step manner. There is no kind of miraculous instructions that will get you there. There is no miraculous instruction. Okay? Carry on. Yeah.
The first question is, if we commit a bad deed and we try to purify the bad deed, does the bad deed indeed go away, or is it a repository seed and all we're doing is suppressing the conditions for that bad seed to ripen at a particular moment?
Okay. This works in a different way. If you have done something bad and negative, you cannot chase it away like a crow that kind of land down on your kind of roof, you know. If a crow land down on your roof, you can chase it away and it goes away. But you cannot do that with the bad deeds. What you can do with the bad deeds is you can purify it and you can cleanse it. But it is always better not to have done one. Just to try to understand, a clean piece of cloth never stained, and a stained piece of cloth, if you wash a stained piece of cloth, it will still retain some kind of kind of imprints or some kind of things there. It is not comparable at all to a piece of cloth that is clean from the beginning. So from that angle, it is always preferable to not to have it done at the first point. Once it is done, there is only one way that you can purify it. That is the only one good thing about the bad deeds, that you can purify it, you can cleanse it. So once you cleanse it, what happens? There are many ways. One impact, one benefit of cleansing it is you can make it ineffective to produce its impact, produce its result. That is one way of doing that. Now, another way is you can completely get purified from that. It is also possible that can only be done in a way, in a case, if you achieve the complete Buddhahood, then you are completely free from that. That is another possibility. Now, if you purify it now and you get rid of its resultant impact, that is another way of it. So for a common human being, it is possible to do it in that way, to get rid of its result. Okay?
Yes, thank you, Rinpoche. The second question is, can you advise, I guess, for all of us, and especially for young students, on how to incorporate the Dharma in practice and also stay relevant in our society, in our busy society, with, you know, school work and work itself and a lot of other responsibilities?
That's a very good question, very practical question. I appreciate that. That's you see, if you are in the corporate world, of course, you have to compete, and it's a very common thing, you know. But while being in a corporate world and competing with your competitors, you still can retain some values. Even in the corporate world, there is corporate ethics, you know, and there are many corporate participants who always don't abide with those corporate ethics. And if you just abide with those corporate ethics, but without any Buddhist understanding and application of Buddhist teachings of function of cause and effect and such things, it's just you are abiding with certain ethics and such thing like that. It is not to be considered that you are practicing Buddhism. But once you have taken refuge into the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, and you know these instructions of the Buddha, and driven by that knowledge, driven by that understanding, and willing to abide within that circle and that boundary, if you leave and if you do your daily conduct within that boundary, then you're also abiding within the corporate ethics, and at the same time you are abiding within the instructions of the Buddha. This is one way. And another way is, you know, it's very difficult to come up with a formula for every individual, because every individual is involved in different fields of profession. So basically, the primary intention whenever you go to work must be to benefit others and help others. At least not to harm others. That is very important. If you are driven by this kind of intention, of course, when you go out, you have to deal with your customer, you have to deal with your boss, you have to deal with your colleagues and all those things. If all those dealings are done with a sense of love and care and respect, then you can kind of change your corporate engagement also into a dharma, practice of dharma. So the most important thing is the intention. But when you, if you try to get into the detail, then there are a lot of details of that. What, in certain circumstances, what you should choose. In other circumstances, what you should choose. It is all kind of specific to those circumstances. And there, to be accurate, you need a lot of wisdom. In order to that, you need to study more, you need to learn more, you need to understand more. So for that reason, most important thing is study, learn. Then you will be more wise. Okay? Okay, time is over. So, Gishila, can you just send the chicken? The engine on the thing of the carrier of the thing, what the duration. Alingil did not scarf for it. Such a big. English.
O infinite Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, you are the embodiment of uncontaminated and immutable great bliss. Kindly pour on us now your blessings. Rain the nectar from the great clouds of your pervasive, pure, and bright wisdom and compassion to eliminate our distress.
We pray to you and Ekan Prabhupada, great hero, who perfectly realized within his mind the twofold ethics, pure self of Sankara teachings. He who has raised a parasol of Dharma in hundreds of directions. Your body is a son of all wonderful qualities, but all of a sudden it set into solitary peace. You have committed before infinite Buddhas to work for Dharma and sentient beings. You could not have given up your commitment. However, your presence depends on the fortunes of disciples, for the power of dependent arising is inconceivable. Please reincarnate soon as a new light of Dharma. Of your compassion that never abandoned us, please return soon as a supreme spiritual guide, a treasure house of the immense teachings of the Buddha, a voice that eloquently elucidates the teachings, that suits individuals' dispositions and capacities. Please return soon as a great Dharma king, who will be known in all directions, from smashing into pieces, mountains of discarded teachings and views, through the power of your thunderbolt lightning of the true reasoning. Please return soon just like yourself, an expert in five major sciences of Buddhism, whose eloquent words and articulation of the teaching captivated the hearts of all the scholars and activate in pure, enthusiastic mind. Please return soon as a spiritual guide, endowed with complete knowledge, kindness, and dedication, in regard to the perfect view, meditation, and conduct, one who facilitates the opening of the blossomed lotus, that is the golden teaching of the Sangha, by the power of the three infallible jewels, by the power of independent arising of unchanging emptiness, by the truth of our pure thoughts and devotion, may all our aspirations be spontaneously fulfilled. Karidave.
Singandir pendan deva malu juve nijire zewa dinzi gyazo ishabe sibe badu dingiro iji. Rinpoche mage banam kegyo kewa nyamba mebayan kone kondo pevara isho. Rinpoche mage banam kegyo kewa nyamba mebayan kone kondo pevara isho. Māgye bāna gye gyōji, gye wā nyāmbā mē bāi, kōne kōndō pē varāi shō. Mā sāngye dō gyōrāne, dō wā jī gyāma lūmbā, dē sālā gō varāi shō.
Okay, now we have a short function here. Please be seated. Okay, thank you very much for your patience. You can relax now. If you like to extend forward your legs, you can do that. It's no more teaching. Okay, we have some token gift to the present board of directors, and I would like to call the present board of directors one by one, and if someone is missing, I request Annie to receive the gift for them, okay? First of all, I would like to call Doran Harper Lee for his precious support and the services to the Thupten Thargeling Center for all these years, and we appreciate your support and your dedication, and thank you very much for that. Could you please give a clap to Doran. Thank you very much. And second, I would like to call Jim Bain. Jim Bain. Thank you very much, Jim Bain, for your help and your support throughout the years. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, then I would like to call Lee Pan for your support and your hard work for all these years. Thank you very much, Lee Pan. Thank you. Then I would like to call Robin Hart. Please come forward. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your support. We appreciate it. And now I call Annie McCormack. Thank you very much, Annie, for your support. Thank you. Thank you very much. And now after this, on 5 o'clock, we have a meeting where I request the presence of all the present board of directors and the candidates, those were, whose name were listed in the candidacy of the kind of future board of directors, the new board of directors. So please keep that in mind. Thank you very much for your presence. Once again.